You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Welcome to Hendox on High Street, the shores of High Street, if you will. It was kind of a nice sunny day. We are here for the Massive Report, an hour late, 7 o'clock Central Time. For our Chicago Fire listeners, or whatever you're going to call your team. Good luck with that. The Massive Report is brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your home from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you through the entire process to build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next project. You never know who the panel's going to be. It's like one of those ESPN panel shows where sometimes people are switched out and whatnot. I get it. People are busy, but here we are. We have Ralph Schudel. Ralph, we're going to be talking about your grades. Ralph does not grade on a curve. He grades on a flat line.
Oh, I was scared that we were talking about my grades from like college or high
school. No, we're talking about your grades handed out after the crew unfortunately fall 1-0. We'll get to that here in a sec. Alex Stanek is here. Good morning, or good evening, Alex.
How's it going?
Apparently not very well, since I think it's morning. And Sam Fahmy is behind the controls and may jump in with a comment at any time. We don't know. Well, it was 1-0 up there in Montreal. My daughter was playing in the Nike Cup tournament on Saturday. So before kickoff, I was sitting in one of those fold-out chairs trying to watch the game on my phone. The field looked terrible. That was it as bad on a regular-sized flat screen as it looked on my phone?
So to answer your question originally, as I said before, I started talking into the side of the microphone to try to look at everybody, but it apparently appears that I'm going to have to stare down at the table, which is fine. Okay. You know, I talked to the guys in the Slack channel and asked if anybody looked at social media, because the social media guy, Aaron McPherson, shout out to Aaron. He's a good dude. But posted pictures of the pitch, and it was brown. I mean, it looked like it went through a July drought.
It looked like the groundskeeper was me. If you saw my lawn, what the dogs do to the backyard and the front yard, I don't even know what the hell's going on with that. So it's not acceptable to play Major League Soccer and anything that looks like my lawn. But no excuses. I just wondered if it looked as bad on my phone as it did in real life.
It did. Yeah, it was horrible.
Still better than New York City, though, gents. That's what I would say.
Okay. Well, it was 1-0. I saw, like I said, the first half hour, but I feel like I didn't really see anything. There wasn't really anything going on. I understand there were some decent opportunities. There was one for Robinho in about the 39th minute, and he got one of your top grades. We'll get to that here in a few minutes, Ralph. Should we have won the game? I mean, was it one of those where just a bounce here, a roll there, and we win? No?
No. So the thing with the game was that it, you know, Montreal had a plan. They came out. They typically run a 4-3-3 with a high press.
Yeah.
Dropped into a 4-5-1, kind of locked down the middle of the field, tried to take away all of the passing lanes. Shout out to Samuel Piette, who is a guy that I profiled in the scouting report earlier in the week. Did a really nice job kind of picking off any pass within about a 5-foot radius of him. He was electric for Montreal. You could see Caleb Porter had a very definite game plan in place. The execution was kind of lacking. It was very sloppy. I don't know how much of that is to the pitch, how much of that is to the guys that are trying to execute said game plan. But like you said too, Brian, I mean, you look at Robinho, he was electric. He did a very nice job coming in, starting, kind of went about the same distance that he did that we've seen in all these other starts that he's had. And seems to be earning the confidence of his manager, being left in as Justin Meram came in to actually replace Pedro Santos, which I thought Pedro was very pedestrian in this game, had kind of a shot that summed up the microcosm of how Crew SC performed in this game, where he cut into the right side of the box and literally kind of not as emphatically, but took a shot that was Teal Bunbury-esque. It didn't get up into the upper 90, but it certainly seemed like It was shot on a rope, just a straight line wide of goal. Didn't really challenge Evan Bush at all or anything like that. But, you know, it was an okay game. I think Montreal made the best of a bad situation by forcing the turnover and getting the goal. Rudy did a really nice job of pressuring Jonathan Mensah in his own defensive third to cause a turnover and then find Hari Nivila, which apparently I thought it was Harry for the longest time. But
Hari,
he's of French descent.
Okay.
Neil Sika said it was Hari on the broadcast. But a new guy from, I believe he's on loan from, I think Lyon, I'm not sure. But as we know, Montreal has some Bologna.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bologna. Ties there with the Saputo family. So, but he gets his first goal in Major League Soccer. And once again, Cruessi, give up a first goal to a first timer in Major League Soccer this season. You want to say for, you know,
becoming a thing
for, you know, yeah, like you said, it's becoming a thing. I saw that on Twitter a lot, but you know, it very easily could have went one way or the other. It's just, you know, it's Major League Soccer, home team FC, and that's just how it always seems to shake out there.
Well, I'm going to go back to something you said. If I'm understanding you right, Montreal changed formations and tactics specifically for this game. Did you guys see that, or did I miss the point?
So it started as a 4-3-3, but then it seemed like when they were attacking, they were getting into a 4-3-3. Almost adding an overload to the left side with Lovitz running in on the left-hand side. But when they were dropping back into defense, they were kind of dropping their wingers back, too, to support on defense. So it almost turned into a 4-5-1. It wasn't a definite 4-5-1, but they were definitely dropping back on defense
there. Well, I know in the part of the telecast that I was able to watch, Alex, that Neil Sika pointed out that Montreal in general are perfectly – one of those clubs is perfectly happy to not have the majority of possession. They want to just lock you down and counterattack.
Yes.
It worked out for them. Did we, A, see, because it's another game where, in this case, no goals, and some games where we only score one, are we getting to the point where we should start kind of rubbing our hands together here a little bit and wondering when the goal scoring is going to come? Because you can't live on that tight a margin forever.
I completely agree. Yeah, I thought the performance in general was pretty disappointing. I actually, when the broadcast started, I saw the pitch, and it was bad. I mean, I kind of thought to myself, oh well, that's not good, and oh well, that's not good is basically how I felt throughout the entirety of that game. Just at any moment in that game, it was just mediocre. The whole team was mediocre, and nobody stood out great or bad, but the whole thing was just not good. And yeah, the goals are going to have to start coming from somewhere or we're going to be in trouble. We are basically living off of three really good center backs and a world-class by MLS standards goalkeeper right now and getting results on that basis. When we lose Stefan, there is going to have to be an answer. And if we're scoring one goal every two games or something like that, that's not good enough. I think it's getting near the point in the season where we have to start getting a little bit nervous. We talked about this a little bit last week, too. But if we're kind of at the mercy of Zardes and his form all season long, that's tricky. He didn't get a lot of chances. The whole team was not really onto it, so it's not like he dropped the ball. But we're going to need to get more production from somewhere if we're going to start putting together some results as the season goes on.
Well, it sounds like a fine game for me to miss the majority of it.
Yeah.
For important reasons. My daughter's team didn't have a good match either when the Crew were on. They lost 4-0. So it's a rough tournament. That Nike Cup? I don't know who this team was.
Where was that one at?
We were in Gehanna. Most of it's played in Dublin, but our portion was in Gehanna at Headley Park.
Can your daughter play striker? Can she play striker?
No, she's a central. She did score last Tuesday, though, on like a 35-yard banger.
Nice.
Nice.
Top, right over the goalie's fingers, right in the top of the goal. Nice. And then took another one over the bar by like 2 inches. So
nice.
She was feeling it. But this was rough. That was a good team. They did draw 1-1 in their second game, and nobody cares about that. I'm just saying everybody kind of had a rough day out there on the old pitch. Let's, Ralph, you wrote the grades. We always give you a hard time because you are such a rough grader. But in talking to you guys, you may have been too kind. We're going to see. We're going to get into the grades right now before we take a break. And then we're going to put this game behind us.
Yeah.
Because we have other things. We need to look ahead to Portland. We need to tell you how you can win tickets to that match as well from the Massive Reports and our Massive Report and our friend at 180 Property Development as well. So we'll get to that here in a little bit. But, Ralph,
yes.
You were the game grader. When you sit down to grade the players,
yes.
How do you go about doing that?
So it's a piece that we feature typically
sure.
on the website. It's usually Guillerme Torres who is usually commissioned with this. However, Guillerme was up doing something, I don't know, probably playing volleyball and, you know, working on his tan or something.
Okay.
It was a nice day on Saturday.
Sure.
I can't say I blame him for that, you know. But so typically what we do is we just take a look at the game and it's, you know, who participated in it, obviously.
Are you checking boxes or are you just making
mental notes, taking a look at tape, seeing if there's any issues of, you know, players that have issues that, you know, for Mensa example, I'm sure we'll touch on that here in just a second, that, you know, he was incorporated in that play that led to the turnover that led to the goal. And, you know, it's just you make mental notes of this and see where they can improve or where they can, you know, praise him for things that they've done better, I guess.
Okay. Well, let's go down the list. You gave Zach a 7, and we'll see if Alex agrees here in a moment. Why a 7?
So, you know, Zach did a nice job. The defense did well, too, for the most part, with the exception of the turnover there. But I think Zach really earned this grade towards the end of the game because he had shots that were really dangerous from midfielders Sebastian Tailliere and Daniel Lovitz that very easily could have put the game out of reach for Montreal. Instead, he kept the boys in it by keeping the margin at 1-0.
Hector Jimenez gets a 5.5.
Yeah, Hector had a nice game. You know, he didn't do anything too terrible, anything to cost the team possession. Connected really well on his passing and filled in admirably for Harrison Offal.
Jump in, Alex, when you disagree. Or, you know, say that you agree.
I'm going to give him a 6.
Okay.
I'm going to give Stefan a 6, too. I thought he was okay.
Okay. Jonathan Mensa, as you mentioned, turnover kind of falls on his shoulders.
Yeah, it was a critical turnover in the defensive third after some heavy pressure from Maximiliano Urruti, who then found Navilo there for a shot from the top of the 18 there that, you know, no goalie is going to stop it. You know, I don't care how good Zach Stefan is. No world-class goalie is going to stop most of those shots at that sort of range. Could have done a little bit better to clear the ball up the pitch. Him and Williams were playing kind of a 1-2 to try to get the ball up the pitch, and you can't mess around with the ball that close to the goal mouth.
Alex?
5.5.
Okay. Before we give Josh Williams a grade, do we know what's going on with Gaston?
From my understanding is that he was sick the previous week, I believe, in the Atlanta game. I don't know anything else other than just not being selected. I think we might be checking that right now with our fact checker.
Dig in to see if we know anything. This is beginning to sound like the National Hockey League where they don't tell you anything. Upper body, lower body, and that's all you get. With his injury history, one wonders if maybe he's feeling some discomfort with the knee. I mean, it's certainly possible. And as cold as it's been off and on this spring, I don't know. Well, and having him on that bad field was probably not a good idea either.
Well,
so.
To that point, too, and if you look at it, I know people got up in arms about the Atlanta game, but you're not going to risk somebody who had total reconstructive surgery on their knee playing in a monsoon.
He should not have been playing in that game.
And then playing
on dirt.
I totally
agree with that. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, okay. Maybe it's just as simple as that. We'll wait to see if we get any other answers on that. But it's not like Josh Williams is a person that we don't have confidence in.
Yeah.
You gave him a 5, Ralph.
Yeah, I mean, it just, you know, Josh was very ho-hum, and that's no disrespect to him. Like I said, he got caught in that kind of weird play with Mensa that led to the goal and got caught out of position a couple times. I think he's capable of turning in a better performance. Saturday just wasn't one of those performances.
Okay, Alex?
I'll give him a 6. I thought he was mediocre like the rest of the team. And I'm giving mediocre players 6s this season, so that's what I'm giving him.
Auteur.
It's like a failing grade, but not quite.
It's
like a C. I think of like a 6 as like a C, and then you get like a 7 is like a B.
In school, that's a D. 60%.
Yeah, but I don't know.
5 is an F.
I'm never going to give a player less than a 3. I feel like so that's kind of how I'm thinking of this. My grade scale is like 3 to 9, and then 10 if you're incredible.
Okay. I gave Will Trapp a 10 a couple weeks ago for autographing a girl's jersey.
Yeah.
Hey,
it was the prom girl's jersey?
Yeah. That's important. I bumped him up to a 10. I thought that was cool. Artur, a 5.
Oh, we're not going to touch Waylon?
Oh, did I skip over him?
Yeah,
I apologize. Waylon.
Waylon, I thought, had the best game in the back four, to be honest with you. Combined really well with the midfield and the forwards to get the ball up the pitch. Never really turned the ball over in dangerous situations. Looked really good on the attack and covered when he needed to.
Okay. Alex?
I give him a 6.
Okay.
I'm going to give almost everybody a 6 today. We'll see how this goes.
All right. I think I skipped ahead to Artur because I just love saying Artur.
Artur.
A 5.
Very pedestrian performance. He passed a lot laterally and backwards. It was kind of a la crew of 2016, unfortunately. I know a lot of folks who are listening to this might have just cringed a little bit. He's mainly served as that pivot point on the attack, but just really couldn't settle into his role on Saturday.
I really feel like before we see if you agree or disagree, my thought on Artur this year is that of all the guys in the regular 11, he seems to be the one that's having the most trouble finding his way into Caleb Porter's system and finding his way on the. I feel like he was more effective before. And I know it's early, but and that's just I can't prove that to you with charts and graphs. It's just an overall feeling I get.
Yeah, I mean, the eye test, I would say, is, you know, that's...
Because I like him as a player.
Fairly accurate. He's doing really well. I noticed, like you said, that he's acting almost, I want to say, more scrappy this season than
okay.
he was in previous years. He's not the offensive guy, if that makes sense. For a holding midfielder, he's not thinking as offensively minded as he has in previous years. Instead, he's kind of almost assumed the Tony Chani role where he's not afraid to body up and kind of get some tackles in there.
Okay. Well, he was felled by that broken arm last year, and
yes.
that certainly set him back. So, you know, it's good to hear from your point of view that he's sticking his nose in there because you need guys to do that as well. Alex?
Yeah, so I thought he actually had an okay game. I think in previous games he has struggled because teams are really pressing this season. Teams always press us, but especially now that Porter's the head coach, I feel like teams are thinking that this is the way to kind of get at us, to just double press or triple press everybody who's got the ball in that center midfield trio of Artur, Trapp, and Higuain. And so you just see guys kind of swarm at these players. With that being said, I thought Artur did okay. He had 91% pass completion, which was higher than Trapp and higher than Higuain. So from that standpoint, if his job is just to kind of distribute the ball effectively, he seemed to do that. A lot of those passes were like Ralph said, they were kind of horizontal or backwards passes, but he didn't lose possession as much as those other guys. So, you know, points there, I guess. But in general, our midfield just kind of struggled to find a rhythm. I'm not sure if the pitch contributed to that. Or if that was just, you know, they were having an off day. We always seem to struggle when we go to Stade Saputo. And I
yeah.
don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I have been there on 2 away trips, and we've come away from those 2 away trips with 0 points.
I think that's a good point, and it's one of the mysteries of sports.
Yeah.
You know, you see this in every sport where, especially if a lot of games are played, you see this in baseball. You see it in hockey and basketball, where you have an inferior team that struggles against everybody,
yeah.
but for some reason they just own you, and you don't know why, and you can't put your finger on it. You know, and hopefully that'll change someday, but you're right. And those are conference points too, so we got to figure out a way to play better there.
It's a tricky place to watch a game even. I remember the first time I was there, one thing I noticed that I've never seen in any other away trip is when they get close to your goal with the ball, the volume is kind of the background noise in the arena, in the stadium, rises. So you hear everybody kind of this, like, everybody kind of go, ooh.
Are they pumping
it gets
fake
louder.
Noise like the Atlanta Falcons?
Everybody gets louder the closer you get. So you start getting stressed if you're, you know, especially if you're defending the other half of the field because you can't always see. And you're like, oh, man, are they about to get a shot? So I don't know if that kind of plays into it or what, but I talked to a friend in Montreal. They said every place in the city is brown like that. There's no green grass anywhere in the entire, you know, province of Quebec. So, you know, maybe it's not, you know, so
it's cold up
different
there.
From there. But, you know, it's just a tough place to get a result.
Well, we'll see if we can turn that around later. And, of course, we play them in our place later on in the season as well. Will Trapp gets a 5 from you, Ralph.
Yeah, wasn't bad, wasn't good. Didn't really do anything poorly. Didn't call his name either for anything.
I'm going to give him a 6. I'm going to keep giving all the mediocre players 6s, and I thought he was mediocre.
Pedro Santos with a 5 as well.
Yeah, had a few good attacking runs on his way in. Unfortunately, slowed the buildup down just a little too much and allowed Montreal to catch up. Like I talked about that errant shot earlier in the show, it just kind of summed up, you know, Crew's day, basically.
Pedro Santos there. Higuain Pipo with a 6. He usually fares better, even with you, Ralph.
Yeah, I thought Higuain was actually pretty decent. Was trying to get the engine moving for the team. Unfortunately, his teammates just really couldn't get linked up with him. But as we talked about and Alex touched about it, you know, he created a couple good chances with himself and Giassi Zardes. But, you know, unfortunately, those attacks came to pass.
I'm going to give Higuain a 6.5. I thought he was the closest we had to any sort of fluid passing all game. I thought he did well to try to avoid that press and to distribute the ball really well to the wings. The wings didn't do much with it, and when the wings were able to get the ball to Zardes, he didn't do anything with it. But, you know, he's doing his job, I feel like, so I'm going to give him a 6.5.
Robinho gets, along with Zach Steffen, the top grade of 7 in this match, Ralph.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was very good, looked dangerous in the attacking area, as we talked about. Could have easily got the game, I believe, Crew SC, if I remember at that time in the game. Actually, could have got the black and gold on the front foot during the game with a great chance there. Like I said, it was really cool to see that Porter rewarded him for a little bit of a longer stay in the game before substituting him out for Nico Hansen later on in the game. But Robinho looks like he's going to be somebody that's going to be kind of keeping that first 11 spot for a while. I don't think we see Josh and Justin there for a second.
I love Justin Williams.
Justin, what a guy.
One of my favorite players. He needs to play more.
But I don't think we see Justin Merrim, unfortunately, back in the first 11 here for a while until he gives Caleb Porter a reason to dethrone Robinho from the starting lineup.
I think one of the best compliments you can say about Robinho is that when it was time for Porter to make an attacking sub and he had to bring off a DP or bring off this kid that we picked up from Brazil who's like, what is he, 22, 23 years old?
24.
He took off the DP. So, you know, he's here to stay. Kid's the real deal. I thought he did well, but I don't think he did enough. I still think we need more finishing from somebody, and I hope it's going to be Robinho because I don't really have a whole lot of confidence in Zardes and Pedro Santos right now. I'll give him a 6.5.
How much with Caleb Porter, and I imagine most coaches are like this, but if you could put a percentage on it, how much does training and how you show on the training pitch have to do with Caleb Porter playing this guy over that guy?
I think from what I've heard and from what I've talked to a few folks, I think it's 90% of the way. That he actually had a quote, I think, about Josh Williams on his performance. I can't think of the previous game, the New England game, that said he earned the performance and the start here in the Montreal game. So he's definitely not afraid to start people who, you know, to use a hockey term, as we've got the Toronto-Boston game on in here, he wants to stay with the hot hand, so to speak.
So, but there's a way forward for a guy like Merrim to win back his playing time, but you got to do it on the practice pitch.
Certainly.
Where the hard work is done.
Certainly.
Okay, that makes sense. Most coaches are like that, Alex.
Yeah, and I'm just kind of not thinking this all the way through, and I'm just going to say it on the podcast because why not? But Justin Merrim wears the number 9, and if Zardes can't find his form, I'd be tempted to throw Merrim up there. Merrim wanted to be a striker for years and years. When he was playing on the right, was left wing under Varzia, he was, you know, practically begging for Varzia to throw him up there.
Interesting.
I think he got kept out by who? Was it Arrieta? Was it Jairo Arrieta who was keeping him off there? And so they kind of converted into a winger. Merrim can finish. You know,
we've seen him do it.
Why not?
We've seen him take all of 9 seconds to score a goal.
I want to see Caleb Porter throw him up there in practice and see what happens.
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to bench Zardes, but
can you play them together?
I'd be tempted to put them both up there, or, you know, late game sub, take off Zardes and put Merrim up there and just see if he gives you a different look.
Because
you could have overlapping wingers then. You could have Robinho kind of going up top and flipping around. Yeah, just all kinds of craziness. You'll get the people, you know, mismatched and all kinds of stuff. So
well,
something
would,
to consider.
I would like to see I'd be all for a little bit of tinkering because what we're doing isn't working in the attacking half.
Yeah.
Jossie gets his six.
Yeah, I mean, he had a couple good chances there, especially in the 39th minute. He touched a shot that just went oh so close to the right post. If it had curled in, if we were playing on grass, that ball would have been in the goal and it would have been a 1-0 lead.
Checked right up there.
Yep. Yeah, and it just, you know, but, you know, the wind in Montreal, it's very cold in Quebec. And it pushed the ball just wide there.
Yeah.
I'm going to give him a 5.5. I still think a lot of the problems that Zardes is having is just that we're not creating enough chances. He's not getting enough opportunities for him to showcase himself. So a lot of kind of the criticism that I'm putting on him and other people put on him is not entirely his fault. But I really wish he would finish some of those chances or at least, you know, drop deep and create space for somebody else and have somebody else move forward. Because he's just kind of on an island in a lot of these games that we've seen last few weeks. And it's becoming a problem.
Well, he's the kind of guy, too, that can get hot.
Yeah.
And you get one, then all of a sudden you've scored two, and then you got another one in the next game. So I wouldn't be at all surprised to see that either. I'm not giving up. This team is in good position.
Yeah.
Just would like to see more goals. I like goals. They're fun. When I was coaching, I used to say, shoot the ball, because scoring is fun, kids.
No, duh.
So that's my advice. Kids at home, I always like when announcers do that. Kids at home, do this. Kids at home, shoot the ball, because scoring is fun. That's my advice.
Don't be a good teammate.
Can scoring would, is know, fun be the title of this week's podcast?
So absolutely.
There we go.
Absolutely. Scoring is fun. And, you know, God bless. You know, I've watched a lot of youth soccer in my years, and a lot of kids are very unselfish. And they talk about kids these days. They're unselfish on the soccer field to a fault. And I'm always sitting there going, shoot the ball, shoot the ball. And they're always passing up good looks for the perfect look that never gets there, and they never see it. So that would be my advice, kids. Just shoot the dang ball and then crash the net.
Yeah, that's hit that back post run,
I was
baby.
A striker when I was a kid. That's you pick up the garbage. That's where all the goals are. Shoot the dang ball.
Shoot the dang ball might be an even better title.
Shoot the dang ball. Pick up the garbage in front. That's my advice.
We'll have to save scoring is fun for when we actually score and we actually win.
Well, we need a T-shirt. That's what we need. Scoring is fun, themassivereport.com. Miriam gets a 5. He wasn't on there too long, but long enough to get a grade from you, Ralph.
Yeah, a couple tough breaks for him. You know, I don't know where Justin Miriam is. I know he's recovering from an ankle surgery, and that's been kind of the mantra for the last couple months. Would have liked to have seen him after the Iraq appearance that he had, where he was doing a very nice job there. But I also get Caleb Porter standing on that. Again, going back to talking to Rubinho, you play the hot hand, and you don't mess with that. But Justin just doesn't seem like himself right now. So, you know, it'll be interesting. I'm kind of curious, especially with the schedule congestion that we get to here in a little bit, if we do see him cycle back into the starting lineup and see if he gets a goal or, you know, even if you talk about it too, I think he shoots the dang ball a little too much, but even maybe if he becomes a bit of a facilitator and gets a couple of those passes off a little bit quicker rather than getting surrounded by three defenders and turning the ball over.
That was certainly a problem early in the year. That New England game was Exhibit A of that, where he was just dribbling into a black hole. That we saw a picture of the black hole the other day.
Yeah.
And it looked... Was it didn't a look a lot like dribbling into... Yeah, it was a picture.
Was it a picture or a reflection? Because I heard that being discussed on the radio today.
That's way too scientific for my feeble brain. I'm just a dumb DJ. Caleb Porter gets... Oh, I'm sorry. Alex, did you have anything to add about Justin or we...
No, I was just thinking about that black hole.
Okay.
I thought the picture was a little underwhelming at first, but then the more I read about what went into it, I was kind of like, okay. But at first, I was like, couldn't you have just, like, focused a little bit more? Like, a little bit sharper image? I know it's, like, 100 billion.
You used an iPhone, the new iPhones. Oh. I mean, it's I know incredible
it's,
pictures.
I know it's, like, 100 million
Sam
light
and I
years
are
away,
cringing right now about
and it's
this.
A little bit, and it's a little bit, you know, hidden behind stuff, and they had to use, like, radio waves and something. But
it's incredible that they actually did photograph a black hole because it's the void of light. So, I mean, sure. That's actually really darn cool. That's pretty dang cool. that they did that.
It just looked like the pictures of the eclipse that people posted on Facebook that they took with their iPhone 4s, and it was just like...
Maybe that's what it is.
Now, granted, the eclipse is like, you know, right there.
Don't stare at the black hole.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, and I talked about this on the radio on CD1025. If you look at the cover of Soundgarden's Super Unknown,
yes,
with the song Black Hole Sun, yeah, and I didn't figure this out. Somebody smarter than me on Twitter figured this out. And you look at the picture, it's not the same, but there's enough in terms of the color,
yes,
and just the look of it that you're going, it's like The Simpsons foretelling the future. Soundgarden foretold the future.
They should re-release. They should re-release the album with that photo as the cover.
Absolutely.
Can we name the black hole after Chris Cornell?
We should. One of the greatest singers in rock history and one of my favorite bands. I'm all for it. Okay, Caleb gets a 6. We don't need to get that.
The photo is amazing in hindsight.
Can I give...
That was just a first impression, so please don't tweet at me. Thank you.
One shout out. Am I...
Talking to the mic.
Bah, bah, bah. Oh. Oh, God. What is... I need, like...
Go ahead. Spit it out.
I'm trying. So, shout out to Nico Hansen, because Nico Hansen came on into the game. Is this all for naught?
No, we can hear you.
Okay. We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay, maybe it's my headset.
You're in the black hole.
I'm in the black hole.
Go ahead.
Right now. So, Nico Hansen came on, played a winger position, then Patrick Mullins subbed onto the game, and Nico Hansen played right back, and he was pretty darn good. I mean, he settled in nicely and kind of randomly gave me hope for the 3-5-2. I know Murph's going to scream if he hears this tomorrow and probably tweet at me and text me and all that fun stuff.
Uh-huh.
But it gave me hope for the 3-5-2 because it looked like Hansen was very content with playing a wingback position. And I think with this match congestion, we can change formations. This could be a talk for later on down the road. I know we started late, but, you know, it just was very interesting. I thought he held his own there. I think he needs a shout-out.
All right, a shout-out for Nico, and a shout-out to Hendox. I'm about to stroll to the bar to get another malted grain. Okay, my second malted grain beverage of the evening here at Hendox. That's the way we do the Massive Report. No apologies. We're at a bar. What do you want us to do? It's
drink water?
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Not with me. I mean, Alex. Alex is the driver. He'll get us home. It's all good. Sam, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll roll through the scores real quick and see if there's anything that jumps out at us, and we will preview Portland and Caleb Porter taking on his old club this Saturday. That's a good storyline. We'll see what's doing there next, and we'll tell you how you can win tickets to the game as well as the Massive Report continues in a moment. Welcome back to Hendox for another edition of the Massive Report. I'm Brian Phillips from CD1025. I've only said that a million times. You'd think I'd be able to say it. But it's not the morning, it's the evening. And it's Monday, and that's why we're here. You should hang out with us at Hendox. We're usually here at 7 o'clock, but we got started a little late tonight. Ralph Schudel is here. He gave out the grades already. Alex Stanek and Sam Fahmy as well. We have to raise a toast to our old friend Duncan Outen, who is a father for the second time, baby Eloise. That is a beautiful name.
Congratulations, Dunks.
Born today. I haven't seen Duncan for a long time. He used to be a common guest on the CD1025 morning show back in the day when he was on the team. Always enjoyed hanging out with Duncan.
Friend of the show,
friend of the Massive Report, and now a father two times over. Life goes by so fast, and we're very proud of you, Duncan. Love your work on the Fox Ohio telecast as well. And we got to have him in here. I mean, bring the baby. Yeah.
I don't think it's happy babies. To bring babies in the adult establishment.
Sure,
like
it's Ohio. It's anything goes.
It's fine.
Sure. You tell it's a baby. It's not like they're going to serve the baby, are they? I don't think so.
This isn't Florida.
Yeah, this isn't Florida. You're right. That's good. I like that. All right, let's go over the scoreboard real quick. If you have nothing to say about a game, just go, I don't care. Friday, Chicago 1, Vancouver 1.
Don't care.
Was that at the Soldier Field? Did they move yet?
No.
So they're really moving to Soldier Field? Moving back there?
That's the
rumor.
What's
Nobody
going
knows.
On?
It's MLS, dude. Nothing.
That doesn't make any sense.
So that's the rumor, but nothing's been confirmed. Okay. I wonder if a lot of this is just stuff they're kind of floating to see what the fan reaction's going to be, and then trying to figure out what they're going to do.
Exactly.
There's three season ticket holders to figure out what they want, and if two of the three like it, they're going to do it.
I cannot. You know, boggles my mind that in Chicagoland you can't make professional soccer work. It's a big city. There's a lot of people there.
Brian, they're not in Chicago. They're in Bridgeview.
Well, I understand that. But still, it boggles my mind that you can't put a competitive team out in the field and, treat your fans like anything other than garbage. Then the fans are tired of it up there.
Well, they're going to get Nicolas Gaitán here pretty soon. So, they could be changing the fortunes here pretty soon.
Is Schweinsteiger still with them?
Yeah, kind
playing of. Center back halfway dead. But yes,
I haven't seen them yet this year. Dallas 2 and Portland 1. We're playing Portland next week, so maybe we should save that.
Yeah, let's save that one.
All right, we'll come back to that one. DC 3 and Colorado 2. That's bad.
Yeah.
I mean, we're looking at the table here. It
something
like
happened to Rooney. I didn't see exactly, but something was.
Well, wasn't he suspended for that red card?
Yeah, he was suspended for the red card. Okay. That was it. That was it.
Well, they managed to eke out a victory against a lower-level club out west, Colorado.
Good for them.
They're good this year, and I hate that because I hate DC United more than anybody
else. But
except for maybe
fun,
Cincinnati.
Though. It's fun,
Benny Failhaber is
I don't want them to do man. Well, but I want the games with them this year to mean something like back in the day.
Yeah.
I don't think that's.
Yeah, I agree.
We're gonna get some knockdown drag out fights this year. I have a feeling about that.
All right. RSL 2, Orlando 1.
Orlando is in all kinds of trouble right now.
Aren't they always?
They did not start Dom Dwyer for this game. Did not start their prized possession in Nani either. James O'Connor went with a different starting lineup for this game. Obviously,
just searching for something.
Did not yield any results either for them. So as RSL and Mike Petke continue on, getting another valuable win this season. But, it's not good times in the purple of the
Well, maybe they need to move the team to Kissimmee. Ooh. Move it out there. Is that how you say it? Or Austin.
I'm just checking Twitter to see if they're also blaming the referees like they do every single week.
I was trading tweets with a Tampa Bay Lightning fan who was blaming the referees for game 2. And he specifically, I've never seen somebody do this. The referees have numbers on the back of their shirts, but nobody pays attention to that. He goes, referee number 6 screwed us. I go, what are you talking about? He goes, well, you weren't at the game. You wouldn't understand. I go, well, you paid your money. So I guess you've purchase the right to complain about something. I have no idea what you're talking about. Referee number 6, really, in a game that you lost 5-1, referee number 6 really had it out for you. Good Lord.
I just still love that their hashtag is hashtag face of city. Why? It's the dumbest thing. Everything about Orlando
City is
so
dumb. Didn't the Magic make the playoffs?
Dumb.
Didn't they make the NBA playoffs?
Yeah,
maybe
the
they
playoffs.
Should be the face of the city.
Heck yeah. Dwight Howard back in the day, baby.
LA Galaxy 2 and Philadelphia, nothing as red-hot Philadelphia cooled off a little bit.
The fighting's Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Yeah. He got a brace in the first half, and that was pretty much it for the Galaxy.
When he comes to town eventually, because I think he's going to play until he's like 42, I'm going to try to meet him because I love him from his AC Milan days. I still love watching Zlatan Ibrahimovic play. But this is the thing. Like, there's this whole debate in Major League Soccer still about whether you should go and get some sort of young kid who, will pan out and make you a bunch of money, or whether you should just get some sort of grizzled veteran who's, got one foot into retirement and just, ride that train until he's completely terrible. In the teams that are doing the kind of retirement home thing are doing really well. You got DC United with Wayne Rooney and LA Galaxy with Ibrahimovic, and it's paying off. So I am kind of like, maybe we should go get some old guy.
So I didn't listen last week. Sorry, guys. Did you guys talk about Felipe and his comments in Vancouver when Zlatan came up last week at all or anything? Did you guys talk about
that? I don't think we talked about it.
Where do you guys stand on teams marketing
other
players for other teams?
I don't like it.
You don't like it?
I don't like it.
Any particular reason?
I mean, it's fine. I guess I shouldn't say just blanket I don't like it. I think it's good business to make your fans aware that Wayne Rooney is coming to town. But if you were to like make him the centerpiece of like your print advertising or your online visual or your TV ad, and it's not about your team, it's about that guy. That's the line.
What if the opposing team outdraws the home fans because of that marketing? So if you had a player like Zlatan Ibrahimovic or, say, Lampard or Pirlo or somebody like that, and say the game took place in Columbus and they were actively marketing via Pirlo and Lampard, which they have, but, you know, what if those fans outnumbered Columbus fans? Would that aggravate you even more so, too, to the point that...
I think there's just a way to do it without being gratuitous about it.
Sure.
You know, I mean...
That's fair.
That's the other team, you know? So you make people aware that they're coming. I think people know or they don't know. For some people, it's not... They're going to go, who? They're casual fans. They just want a night out. So it's not going to make any difference to them. So
what Felipe said, if you didn't see his comments, basically they asked him after the game how he felt about the home crowd cheering when Ibrahimovic scored. And Felipe said it was disgraceful, basically, and that, you know, he hated that, you know, that they should be there for their team rather than for this guy. A couple things about this. A lot of this stems from the fact that we are a single entity league.
Uh-huh.
And that when the league signs a player like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, every team basically subsidizes that transfer. These super high profile players, when there's a transfer fee involved, that transfer fee is oftentimes paid by Major League Soccer as an entity. You don't have that in any other sport where, you know, the league will step in and say, oh, well, we are buying that player. Well, which team is? No, the league is buying the player. And then they're allocating it to a market.
We all know how it works.
It's super complicated.
It's
not
cool, though, but we're never going to get players like that. They're never going to be allocated here.
Yeah, and so, the challenge then is if you are an owner of a team like Vancouver and you've already paid the money for a guy like Zlatan, right, even though he doesn't play for your team, you've literally helped pay for him, then maybe you do market him. And I think the other side of that coin is that the league does not market all teams equally. The league has made the decision, and I think it's the wrong decision, that they would rather market three or four teams in very large TV markets and market five or six big players for those teams 80% of the time and then just kind of occasionally market these other teams.
Well, every sport is going to market their superstars, but let's look at the Blue Jackets. I mean, they're on national TV during the regular season once, maybe twice.
Yeah.
Last year, I remember, they showed the Buffalo Sabres on NBCSN like every week, and that was a terrible team. Why do they keep showing them? They show the same like 6-7 teams, whatever. But, you know, regardless, there is a path forward for the Blue Jackets to do the right things and become very competitive to the point where they're a real danger for the rest of the playoff field in the East at this point. MLS, it feels like they're kind of... I'm not saying that they're meddling with the outcomes of the games, but they kind of are meddling with the product on the field and sort of putting their finger on the scale for clubs like LA Galaxy when they finished last in the West on more than one occasion. That's a major media market.
Could this be to their detriment later on down in the future?
I think it's already to their detriment now.
They're cannibalizing that team's support with another team in Los Angeles.
Yeah, and so I think that when you get, you know, when you're a player like Felipe who gives, you know, your home fans, you know, stick for coming out and supporting Ibrahimovic and supporting LA Galaxy, if you're a casual soccer fan, you've been conditioned over the last 10 years by ESPN and by Major League Soccer's social media accounts and by all these other organizations to support LA Galaxy. I mean, everything is, you have to go out of your way to get any information about the Whitecaps. It's shoved down your throat if you're, you know, a fan who's just, you know, casually following the sport. So, I mean, I feel like on a certain level, you know, Felipe should have a word with the front office and not, you know, his team front office, but the league front office and say, hey, treat all these teams equally. You know, we're all supposed to be equal partners in this thing. And when you don't do that, bad things happen. I'm sure, I don't know if we're going to talk about New York at all, But New York just got, you know, some stick in the national media because they've tarped off parts of the upper deck of Red Bull Arena, a soccer-specific stadium, and they can't sell it out. They averaged about 15,000 last season, and their stadium seats 22,000. And this season, the numbers have been even worse. So, you know, what do you do in a situation like that? And you know, what's the cause for that? Well, maybe it has to do with the fact that since they joined the league, New York City FC has been the ones that have gotten the vast majority of the marketing dollars, even though they play in a baseball stadium.
I know. So, that's,
you know,
ridiculous.
So, you know, some of this comes down to what the league decides to do with things like that. And so I think, you know, Felipe, he's right to be upset, but he's getting upset at the wrong people.
Well, I think part of the problem is that the league is in real danger of overexpanding, and they're addicted to these expansion fees. And we talked about this during the movement to save the crew. It's like, well, the problem is that they've made expansion fees a profit center.
Yeah.
And after a while, you can only put so many franchises. That's what killed the North American Soccer League back in the 80s,
yeah,
was that they put a team everywhere. There was a team in Edmonton and a team in Calgary. Well, that works great for hockey, but for a professional soccer league in North America in the 80s, it was like they had a team in Tulsa, and you know, they had they kept moving teams around. They would put a team in Oakland and San Francisco.
Yeah.
They had a team in Hawaii one season.
Heck yeah.
The Hawaiians.
Yeah.
And Aloha Stadium was so hot that the players' shoes were melting. I found this book at Half Price Books a couple years ago about the history of the North American Soccer League. I got to find it. It's in my house. I might have lent it to somebody. It's
awesome.
An awesome book about, and it takes you through the crazy things and the fringe on the uniform of the Colorado Caribou.
Yeah.
Where they actually, have you seen this, Ralph?
It's like, no. I'll pull up
Google
a picture
it.
Of it. It's,
Google it.
It's
they
the
had
worst.
Actual like Western fringe on their jersey. That league was crazy. And I'm old enough to remember this crap. And my fear is that, not that MLS is going to do things as ridiculous as putting a team in Hawaii, but you know, I'm concerned that there are going to be too many teams, and we're going to get some of the important franchises are going to get lost in the shuffle. We were able to save ourselves here. You see, you're looking at that. Isn't that awesome?
That's
yeah. It's gold with black sleeves and fringe along the, like the chest.
Like
just under
leather,
the,
yeah.
It's the worst uniform in sports history.
I know we got to get back on track real quick, and I'll leave this kind of in the, maybe my final thought, at least. Have you seen the USL team coached by Eric Rinaldo, the Las Vegas Lights FC?
Yeah.
They are, you would love them because they're just totally all about novelty. Like, they take their starting 11 photos with, like, Elvis impersonators.
Llamas.
They had a llama.
Yeah.
They had, like, Rinaldo, like, hugging a llama or something.
That's
like that.
Great.
Like, they have won my fandom just purely on that.
They flew a helicopter over the center circle.
Do they play
on the pitch
at Sam Boyd Stadium where UNLV plays football? Is that where they're playing?
It's an old baseball stadium. They actually just cut the foul poles down last week, actually.
They had a promotion
a place to play.
Like 6 months ago where they flew a helicopter over the center circle and they had like 10 fans out there and they dropped a bunch of money out of the helicopter like and just had these fans like they had like 30 seconds
yeah,
to run
out. I got
out
no of the, problem with yeah. that on that level. I love minor league baseball.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite thing to do during the summer. Just go to a random minor league park. So I get it. You got to market. But I don't even know how we got off on that tangent, but, you know, these are things that concern us here in Columbus, Ohio. Not that MLS is paying attention, because they're too busy paying attention to their new FC Cincinnati, who, after hoovering in some points there early on, surprisingly enough, they kind of come back to earth. LAFC beats them 2-0. Any thoughts?
LAFC just looks good. I mean, I
yeah.
think Bob Bradley's got this team doing the right things right now. Carlos Vela still looks very good. He's kind of, you know, we all knew he was good, but, you know, he's looking the part this year.
Sunday, it was Sporting 2 and Red Bulls 2, but the talk of that was a ball being blasted into the crowd and nailing a fan in the head. Do I understand this correctly?
Yeah, it was Kaku, who plays for New York Red Bulls. It was stoppage time at the end of the game. Really frustrated, and ball goes out of play, and Kaku just winds up and just full on hits a fan in the front row with this ball.
Wow.
And it looked fully intentional. I mean, he looked like he was either aiming for the ball kid or for the player or for the fan, but hit a guy in either the chest or the head. He went down. Paramedics like rushed to him. Kaku got red carded for it.
To be a long suspension. You can't do that.
Yeah, it needs to be a really long suspension. He's claiming, everybody's claiming all kinds of stuff. So he basically said after the game, he tweeted and said, my temper got the worst of me. I apologize.
Well, you can't do that.
Yeah, the Luis Robles, the New York Red Bulls captain, got a bunch of stick on social media, as he should, for giving an interview after the game and saying, well, that's the price you pay for sitting in the front row, which is like one of the most ridiculous statements I've ever seen.
No, there's a difference between, in baseball, you're warned on your tickets, be heads up, pay attention for the ball, the foul ball. And the players always feel terrible when someone gets nailed.
Yeah.
But in the front row at a soccer game, there's a difference between a ball sort of randomly flying into the crowd and someone, a professional soccer player, teeing up a blast off the side of someone's head.
Yeah.
That's, you could kill somebody doing that.
You absolutely can. Easily. And he was okay after the game. A bunch of the New York Red Bulls players went over to him after the game and apologized.
That's outrageous.
He is in a weird spot right now where he tried to force a transfer in the offseason and didn't get it. And so,
well, that's one way to do it, I guess.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure if that factored in where he was trying to do that. He was leaving the pitch kind of with his hand up like he was apologizing, but he was smirking the entire time he did it. I think when you look at the longest suspension in league history, I think it was for Steve Zakuani, the guy who snapped Steve Zakuani's leg. It was 10 games. There was another suspension pretty early on in Major League Soccer history where a player, I forget who it was, but they basically just, kicked the guy in the chest. He was on the ground, and the guy just ran up to him and just kicked him. This is about fan safety, though. I think this has got to be close to 10 games. I honestly think it's got to be close to 10 games.
When my kids were young, they grew up at Crew Stadium.
Yeah.
I would like to think, and this has never obviously been an issue, but when you take little kids to the game, your attention is all over the place.
Yeah.
And you would certainly like to hope that a player on the field isn't going to go, hey, I'm just going to blast a ball into the crowd and hit somebody.
Absolutely.
You know, you could, especially hit a little kid.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That has to be the rest of the season. He has to be gone from the league.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm overreacting here. That's way over the line. And it's the same thing when fans throw stuff on the field.
Yeah.
That's over the line, too.
Nobody does that in Columbus.
Well, it doesn't happen anymore, I don't think. I mean, there used to be beer bottles and bowling balls flying around, but that was in the old days.
Machetes.
But seriously, that's outrageous. We can't have that. And his teammates should just say, pack your bags. You're done. We can't accept that.
And I really thought that Robles was going to come out with a statement and basically say, we're going to deal with this. It was the complete opposite. He basically defended him.
And the league, again, leadership. Leadership. This should you plant your flag on this.
Yeah.
It's very basic.
I agree.
You don't want the fans to be assaulted by the players, and that's an assault.
And we have enough problems with attendance in this country already. And if people feel like they might die at a game, that's probably going to hurt attendance.
I mean, that's believe me, this is an outlier. But this specific incident, it cannot be tolerated under any circumstances. All right, now I'm really mad. I'm going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll tell you how you can win tickets to the Portland game, and we will preview Portland and Columbus Crew next. The Massive Report is back here at Hendox. I just watched the video of Kaku from Red Bulls blasting a ball off a fan's face in Kansas City, and now I'm more outraged.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
This guy should be charged with assault. I'm sorry. You should go to jail for that.
Yeah.
There's a line. That fan wasn't on the field. That fan was in the place where they were supposed to be. And you might as well have walked up and just punched him in the face.
Yeah. I'd rather get punched in the face.
People do that to me on the sidewalk.
That's terrible. All right. We made mention of it. We're playing them this week. Dallas 2, Portland 1 last week. Does that teach us anything about the Portland club coming into Moffray Stadium this coming Saturday night?
They're in poor form right now. They are struggling to find form. But much like DC last season, they're not playing a home game until June because they are going through renovations right now at Providence Park.
Is it that guy with the chainsaw? Just let me fix this.
Yeah, he's just, you know, going through Timber Joey, I think is what they call him, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, he ended up getting a little too rambunctious and
that's
took a couple
long
stands
time
out
to be
and
on
stuff.
The road.
But no, seriously, they're adding like second and third levels of seating and putting like a roof over a portion of the stadium.
It looks good.
It's actually really cool because they have the abbreviation of Soccer City USA, but if you're Italian, it looks like Scusi.
Ah.
So it's pretty funny. But
that place is so goofy looking on TV, and I know back in the day it was a minor league baseball park.
Yeah,
that
it's a
just
hell
sort
of a stadium.
They've just sort of like you. So you've been there.
Yes.
They've just sort of, it's like this house that you just keep adding on to.
Yeah, so it's like, for those that have been there, where Timber's Army is, it's just this big giant grandstand that was behind what would have been home plate at that time.
Yeah.
And then they built up stands that are on the, I can't remember, it's like the east side. So the TV side, they built the stands up. Then on the opposite side of the field side there, they had respectable stands, but it looked like something you would see at like Huntington Park.
Uh-huh.
So then they added more seats. They put two layers on now for seats, or it might be one layer, and then the roof. So they've added more seats to that. And then just on the far area there, there's like this commercial building that reminds me of baseball fans of like Camden Yards where the warehouse was in like right field or something like that. So it's a very unique atmosphere. Definitely very cool for those that have not checked it out. Put it on your bucket list along with Children's Mercy Park where Cuckoo is kicking balls at people and stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of a funky place like Portland, really. It's like it was designed by a couple of old Portland hippies. Let's build a soccer stadium.
Is Mayor Paulson a hippie?
I don't know. But Portland is, you know, it's Portland. It's got its own flavor.
The dream of the 90s is alive in Portland.
So Caleb Porter was run out of town by Portland Timbers. This has got to be an important game to him. He's probably not going to say it, but...
Yeah.
I mean, after winning MLS Cup, and then coaching is such a terrible profession. I mean, you win the cup and then, you know... Not that many months later, you're hitting the bricks.
Well, he was on the hot seat, too, the year that he won the cup. I remember at the start of the year, people were saying that he was, quote-unquote, on the hot seat, and then suddenly he wins the trophy, and all of a sudden he's okay. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting game for him. Obviously, he's got a lot of relationships there with players like Valeri and Aspria, Milano. He brought in Lucas Milano, who has dipped in form significantly since Porter's exit out of there. But I think it's going to be a big game for him. But this is going to be kind of a cool thing. And I'm actually going to try to talk to him at training tomorrow about this. But just kind of where he's at now as a coach compared to where he was when he left Portland. Because a lot of people that I've talked to said that he, you know, was kind of, I don't want to say mentally unstable. Like, he's not, like, insane. But he just wasn't enjoying it. He didn't have the vibe for coaching anymore. Like, he was tapped out. And that showed, and he just, hence his year exodus from the game, and kind of a little bit of a sabbatical, if you will. But, yeah, it should be a big game for him. You know, he talked about coaching players like Darlington Nagbe. He coached Evan Bush from last week in Montreal. And now he's saying that he's getting players, like he's going to get play against Zarek Valentin, who is the outside back for the Timbers. Like I said, he's going to play against Valeri. And a couple of other players that were there during his time in 2015. But he got those guys as boys. And he talked about coaching players like Will Trapp as a man now. So it's going to be interesting to see the Caleb Porter of old being compared up to get against Giovanni Savarese, who is the coach of the Portland Timbers, and how those two styles now, the Porter of old against Porter of new against Savarese, is going to be, you know, a bit interesting. So I'm excited for Saturday. It should be a fun match. A lot of good storylines.
What can we expect from Portland as far as tactics and so forth? How are they going to come at us?
Generally, what for fans, unfortunately, if you remember the MLS Cup in 2015, not much has changed. It's still a 4-2-3-1. Generally, they like to attack down the wings.
Are they still good when the ball goes like 5 feet out of bounds? Is that still a big play?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing that works. But they've got
a young
player, Jeremy Abobasi, who is getting a lot of looks from Greg Berhalter from the men's national team. He's very exciting. He's a good prospect. He's not playing to his full potential right now, but is somebody that you could watch out for a little bit later on down the road. I'm not sure if Darren Aspria is up there fully with them right now. I think he might be down with Timbers too in the USL right now. But obviously, Diego Valeri, much like Federico Higuain, is a little bit faster, a little bit younger, a little bit faster. I know that's going to probably make a lot of Columbus fans a little bit aggravated by me saying that. But and then Lucas Milano, who's a forward who has fallen out of favor, went on loan, has now returned back to the Timbers, still kind of searching very much for his footing. One thing I will notice and will say about this, and probably will be something I will write up in the scouting report on Friday, is that the back four is nowhere near as good as they were under Caleb Porter. They've lost Alves Powell to FC Cincinnati. Ridgewell has moved on. Nat Borchers has retired. Jorge Villafania is still back, but he's about the only leftover there. And then the goalkeeping situation is a little bit of a toss-up between Jeff Antonella and Steve Clark. It's going to be a little bit interesting to see who will play in
that
game.
I'll bet Steve plays.
I hope Steve Clark plays and he takes a really bad touch and Zardes taps it in. That's all. That's what I need. That's what I need.
That black hole will suck us all into oblivion.
I will embrace the black hole if I can just get
absorbed after
the universe is balanced by Steve Clark taking a god-awful touch and us scoring a tap-in. I like Steve.
Those are iconic bad plays. Those two plays we just mentioned, the Steve Clark boner in the MLS Cup and that ball out of bounds. I can say that.
I know you're using that ball out of bounds.
Those are two things that just, you're right. They stick. I can still taste them. They're so fresh. And that was, 3.5 years ago.
I can tell you everything that was happening when that ball went out of bounds. Like, I remember it so vividly. I was in Nordeca, and so I was straight in line with that.
I saw it.
It was horrible. It is still the most infuriating thing.
How do you miss that in your league's championship game?
My stomach.
How do you miss that?
The feeling that I got in my stomach after that whole situation. I just hope I never experience that ever again because that, the feeling I had was sickening.
And this is the worst thing about playing Portland is I'm pretty sure 20 years from now when we're playing Portland, I'm still going to think about those two stupid plays.
And we only play them once a year and only once every other year here. So it's you should definitely come out to Monterey Stadium for a little revenge.
Yeah, come out
best
and watch.
Best served cold.
Yeah. Come out and watch Steve Clark bring balance to the force by letting in a bad touch goal.
It's probably going to be Jeff Antonello, to be honest with you.
Oh, my God. That would be just so perfect.
Yeah, I just need him to take a bad touch and Zardes to pounce on it. You know what would be even better? Can we get Pedro Santos to pounce on it? Like, that would be good. Or Pipa. I don't even care. Just somebody.
I get what you're saying.
I need that to happen.
All right. So I feel like there's some goals coming into this game. Give me predictions.
It's tough. I think, talking about the defense, the goalkeeping situation, I think Antonella, unfortunately, Alex, is going to start the game. I don't think Steve Clark will play for Portland. Antonella has been their main go-to guy. I haven't looked at Portland's schedule, honestly, in a while to check and see how it would look and see if they would have some fluctuation in their lineup. But I'm going to go with a 1-1 tie.
1-1 tie. Gosh, I was hoping for more goals than that, Ralph. For us. I mean, we need them. Alex?
I'm going to go with my, my galaxy universe balancing act here and say 2-0. Because I need it. I can't do this every year.
That's
forever.
Kind of where I'm at here. You know, I've been throwing out these scores like, crew, 4-1. Obviously, I'm insane. I mean, it takes us four games to score four goals at this point. So I got to stop doing that. But I like the 2-0. That's a good,
solid
midpoint in my. You know, I've been too much of a homer with these predictions. I just get so excited. I mean, no one expects me to know anything. I'm just throwing out the questions.
Oh boy!
So 2-0 though. I'm going to go with Alex. So if we're wrong, we're both wrong together.
That's right.
Sam, you got a score?
Sam says
3-0.
Oh, 3-0.
3-0.
What direction?
3-0 crew.
3-0 crew.
3-0 crew. 3-0.
That's a bold strategy, Cotton.
All right. Why not? Now, you can win tickets to this match courtesy of our fine sponsor, 180 Property Development. You just listen to the whole podcast, and Sam, you'll post a question, and someone has to answer it correctly, And you, out of all the people that answer it correctly, one of those people win the tickets.
Put your name in a hat and shuffle
and
around.
And you'll be featured on the site as well, massivereport.com. You'll be world internet famous.
So when we do this for the Cincinnati game, can we find some way to like filter out all the Cincinnati players, fans, and like make sure that we rig
this? Yeah, it's got to be something that only we would know. I think it has to be.
I don't know if that's going to happen. We'll see. We'll see how that works out.
Okay.
I think it has to be Columbus specific if we do it. It has to be something really specific to Columbus.
If Cincinnati people are listening to the podcast, I'm not going to argue, to be fair.
A listen's a listen.
If they do get these tickets,
I will argue.
They're going to be sitting in the middle of crew fans, and
okay.
I can promise no protection.
That's kind of fun. I get you.
Having said that, I will say, if you do send in a correct answer and you do win and you do receive an email that says, hey, reach out so you can collect your tickets, reach out and collect your tickets.
Are people not reaching out and collecting their tickets?
We've had our previous winner did not bother to collect or respond to any of my several
emails.
Well,
that's
kind of weird. And that sends us a little bit in a tailspin on game, to be quite honest.
Not necessarily. It is a little irritating on my part because I have
maybe
to make sure
maybe they were a bit under the weather
we
or
deliver.
Something.
Well, even if you win and you cannot, which we've had happen actually already before, if you win and you cannot use the tickets, feel free to tell us, I cannot use the tickets. Please give them to somebody
else.
Can
I use the tickets?
No.
No, you cannot.
Oh.
This reminds me of when I'm on the radio and I give away tickets to something and then the person says, cool, what did I win? It's like the only thing they heard is call now.
Nice.
And I go,
give us your social security number.
You won tickets to the Black Keys. Oh, really?
Sweet. Who are they?
Yeah. Or if it's something that they don't know or don't care about, then it's, I don't really want those. Give them to somebody else. Well, why did you call? You know, just, I don't know.
Can I have a t-shirt?
It's annoying.
Don't forget, a little shameless plug, both teams are going to wear the Parlay for the Oceans for the Earth Day stuff. The special edition uniform.
I like
which
it.
Which you are wearing right
which
now.
I'm donning, courtesy of
so
the USC shop
the,
right
the
now.
The team that is named after the process whereby forests are clear-cut, and left bald, the mountains left bald and bereft of trees are suddenly down with Earth Day.
Yeah, they're wearing a recycled plastic uniform from the oceans because that's how we do things, apparently.
All right, well, that's good. I like that.
What's the carbon footprint on the production of these shirts?
That's a good point.
I don't
that's
wanna,
a really good
I don't
point.
No, I don't want to.
They're comfy.
They're comfy, though. We're just trying to do the right thing around
I still kind of want one.
All right, guys, we are done. I was the one that said we need to move this along because I got to get up early, and I'm the one that's like, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, Chatty Cathy.
I got mad. You want the podcast to go long? Tell me about a guy kicking a fan in the head with a ball, and then we'll be here for hours.
It's so ridiculous, though.
The Massive Report was brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping and remodeling or even building your dream home from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. Win those tickets. We'll be back here Monday at our regular time of 7 p.m. here at Hendox. And maybe, God forbid, you'd want to hang out with us. We've got the whole room to ourselves. You just can't play pool while we're here.
Yeah.
Otherwise, come see us here at Hendox next Monday for another edition of the Massive Report. For Alex, for Ralph, for Sam, I'm Brian. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.